everyone, and welcome to another episode of Upzoned, a Strongtowns podcast where every week we take just one big story from the news and we upzone it and talk about it in detail. I'm Kia, your regular host, and this week I actually invited someone a little special to come on and join us, who I hope you're going to get to hear a lot more from because he's one of my favorite people in the Strongtowns world to talk to. His name is John Reuter, and he is on our board. He's a super cool guy who I think brings a very different perspective to anything we do at Strongtowns and will be a really good addition to Upzoned. He lives out in Seattle right now, but he spent most of his life in rural communities. You'll see why that is relevant in just a minute. And his day job, whose opinions he does not express here today, of course, is actually with the League of Conservation Voters. So I'm very happy to welcome John on. How are you doing today, John?
Well, it is a pleasure to be here. It's always a little nerve-wracking to be recorded, right? Coming out into the world. But I'm thrilled, as always, to get to talk about Strongtowns and dive deep on something. And of course, a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for that more than kind introduction.
Well, we are going to get to know you a little bit better over the course of this podcast, in large part because I picked a topic this week that I think you uniquely are going to have something interesting to say about. It is everyone's favorite, arguably sarcastic, New York Times opinion columnist Paul Krugman wrote an op-ed actually about a month ago, but it has echoed through the news over the past 4 weeks, called Getting Real About Rural America. And it's kind of the biggest bummer in the world. That's the best way that I can summarize this piece. Krugman sort of argues over the course of the article that rural America, while it used to be a unique asset to our country, has now sort of fallen prey to larger economic trends that it is powerless to stop. The only way to save it is to create big subsidies and job creation and basically make rural communities more like the cities. But they already tried that in Germany and it didn't work. So we're doomed. That's sort of my reading of the article. So I read this and I think we talk about rural places through a very different lens at Strongtowns. And I know, John, since you've been involved with us for so long and because you've spent so much time throughout rural Idaho and parts of Oregon and these really interesting places, that you might have something unique to say about it. So what was your reaction when you read the Krugman piece?
Well, I don't know if I have something unique to say, but I certainly have a different opinion than Paul Krugman. And it's interesting because, you know, in the world that I travel in, where I'm known as someone who thinks a lot about rural America and spends a lot of time doing work there and spent time on a small town city council and spent a little bit of time, you know, working in small newspapers, sometimes in towns as small as 200 people, where the big city was the 2,000 people away. This article has actually been forwarded to me like multiple times by multiple people. So it's really something that just keeps coming up over and over again. But I think you really put a finger on the challenge here, which is that Krugman really suggests, right, that the only possible solutions to these problems are big centralized solutions. And so he says, boy, we have this problem, but we can't possibly come up with a solution because there isn't a solution that neatly fits in to the way that he's naturally thinking about the world. This becomes most clear. There's a section where he talks about it and he says, many of the problems facing America have easy technical solutions. And all we lack is the political will. And then he names things like providing universal health care and affordable child care. And then the one that's going to be, I think, is a laugh line for our community, right? He said, rebuilding our fraying infrastructure would be expensive, but we can afford it. And it might even well pay
for
itself. And I'm like, no, it will not. No.
Right.
Wrong. And that we could spend the entire podcast just talking about the fraying infrastructure and just how expensive that would be and just how out of reach that is in terms of affordability. But I think we'll leave that to another time because I feel like that's sort of Strongtown's bread and butter, just how big a hole we've gotten ourselves into. But what is important, right, about each of those problems and the solutions that he recommends is they're all large scale, federal solutions that all are centralized, right? So it's taking problems that are big and complex problems and coming to centralized solutions. And in my day job, right, I think a lot about climate change and how to address climate change. And one of the things we often discover there, right, is if you look at where a lot of denial comes from, it comes from people whose political ideology makes climate change a particular difficult problem to deal with. Because it requires, because it's global in nature, it requires large-scale action. And you can decentralize to some degree, but it really challenges some of the precedents of how decentralized can that be. And in this case, I see the opposite taking place with Krugman, where the problem of rural communities and their economies really is one that is not well suited to centralized solutions and really can't be solved through centralized solutions. And he goes through a litany of examples where centralized solutions have been tried and have failed. And it just doesn't work. You can't apply that particular ideological lens to this particular problem if you want to actually make a difference. So that's sort of my initial like take there.
So what solutions would work for rural communities? Chuck and I got into this a little bit in sort of an oblique way in last week's Upzoned. If you missed that episode, we talked about how land value tax arguments that we make at Strong Towns all the time don't neatly apply in rural contexts, and especially in agricultural contexts. Rural cities are kind of their own thing, because what we're talking about is like a mismatch between the level of service that these places need, which is actually quite low, and the level of productivity that they give to a region, which is high. However, not high in the ways that when we talk about, for instance, the tax value per acre on a square foot of Manhattan real estate, you know? How can we make rural communities more resilient? And what does Strong Towns have to do with all that?
Well, I think one of the most important points inside of that, right, and this came up last week, right, along the podcast, is it's a lower level of infrastructure. You cannot have the same infrastructure for farmland, certainly, that you're going to have in the middle of New York City. The tax base just isn't there to support it. But if, on the other hand, you are on a wall, probably on a well, and you're on a dirt road, then, you know, it works out pretty well economically. And that's similar, right, in small towns. We're not going to have our small towns filled with the same kind of city services that we see in our major cities in terms of, right, you're not going to have the same level of public transit. You're not going to have the same level of street cleaning, right? But if you right-size the infrastructure to the place and you create appropriate small town density, right, which is really key, then I think you actually can have places that have the basic infrastructure and the bones to be economically successful. Now, that's not enough in and of itself. And I think it's really important. And this is one of the things I think is really interesting in Krugman's piece, is that this is also true of the city, right? Cities for decades had the right bones in place. And by that, I mean the grid pattern, buildings that were built to the street. They were built in this classic way. And yet we saw a lot of problems in the middles of our cities, in the inner city parts of our, you know, of them, where we saw, even though you had the right grid and you had everything else and financially it was working, they weren't great places to live. And what's interesting, right, is during that time, the Paul Krugmans of the day came up with big centralized solutions to those problems, the most evident of which was urban renewal, where there came in their plan was just to clear those places out, knock down buildings, put highways in, build all this infrastructure, and try to plan all these things from city hall or from state capitals or even from DC. And the result was actually great harm to these communities. And it actually made it harder for them to bounce back rather than helping them, right? And so when it comes to this revitalization of places, we don't have a good track record, even in cities, where I'd argue centralized policy as a slightly better track record. It's not a great track record. And when it comes to small towns, as Krugman correctly points out, the track record of success is almost non-existent.
Absolutely. So I'm curious how your personal experiences with this have impacted the way you've come to think about rural places, John. Why did growing up in a semi-rural place and running newspapers in very rural places and living in rural places bring you to the work of Strong Towns? It's a little outside of the article, but I'm so interested to hear about that perspective, because I just discovered last week that Chuck grew up on a farm, and I think that we might have more of a like cross-section of farmy types in the Strong Towns organization. And I'm curious how that sort of underscores the work of the Strong Towns organization in our message.
Well, first, I obviously adore Chuck and we're close friends, which I only say to now criticize him and say he did not grow up on a farm.
Oh, wow. Fighting words.
I grew up in a ranching farm family.
My farm is bigger than yours. I love it.
I'm just saying, he mentioned it in the podcast that his farm would be considered a real farm by people really connected to agriculture, and he is correct. it's a nice little urban farm, I might call it, 2 miles from there. It's not out in the middle of public lands with where you have to drive, you know, miles of dirt roads to actually get to my family's ranch. Just saying.
Got it. You win.
Setting aside the snark, and someone else will be on next week and they'll be like, he doesn't have a real ranch. Let me tell you.
I live on a mountain. Yeah, there you go.
Right.
All right.
But I think where I entered Strong Towns was as a city council member in a small town in North Idaho, Sandpoint, Idaho, about 6,000 to 8,000 people. I was working on problems there, and we were trying to see things working out. And it really became clear and apparent that even in this small, largely sustainable town that hadn't seen the same kind of de-densification and large box stores, because they actually hadn't allowed them to be built there, so they all got built one town over, we were still seeing that when it came to things like our infrastructure, in particular our utilities, and even our roads, that the numbers weren't penciling out. We couldn't actually afford to maintain all of these things without raising rates on a community that really couldn't afford to see those rates raised, right? Simultaneously, big employers in town, Coldwater Creek being one of the biggest, was actually closing its doors while I was on city council, and you saw other kinds of struggling there. And we also saw a lot of successes, things like Lighthouse Salad Dressing, which is based in Sandpoint and a family-owned company that incrementally grew. And I want to talk more about that because I think that's part of the key of these town successes. But that's how I came to Strong Towns, was in that city council role, and where a neighboring planner, I'll give him a shout out, Eric Brubaker, said, hey, John, a lot of things you're talking about, I think you'd really like this this blog. And Strong Towns was just a blog back then by this guy named Chuck Marone. And I checked it out and I was like, you're right, I really do like this a lot. And this is really helpful.
Yeah. So maybe to take up the Lighthouse Salad Dressing example, color me intrigued. We also got an article from the New York Times as well today about how the way to revitalize rural areas that are struggling to attain economic productivity and also to socially connect people is to invest in the nearby rural towns, which are kind of their own thing. And it sounds like Sandpoint might fit into that blueprint a little bit. I'll link that piece as well. You know, this is a free-for-all now, this episode. What did you think of that piece? And tell me a little bit about how the Sandpoints of the world can contribute to, you have to remind me the name of the very, very small towns you lived in Idaho that were more truly agrarian.
Are they truly agrarian or not anymore? That's an interesting question, because a lot of the agrarian areas in Idaho are really in eastern Idaho, where there's large-scale dairies there, as well as surrounding farmland that in part helps support those dairies, as well as growing potatoes that we're famous for. And I did not live in the middle of potato country, but I did live in a small town called New Meadows that had about 200 people in it, that was next door to the big city of McCall, which had a few thousand people in it, which is a real resort, tourist-driven community that's on a lake. So, you know, having been those kind of places, I think that's an example of where McCall was central, right? Without McCall, there is no New Meadows. And that's true up in Sandpoint, too. Without Sandpoint, which was the largest city in a county of 40,000 people, there was no place for people to gather and to meet. And not that there were Grange Halls, and there were other, you know, there were bars here and there in other cities in the county, Dover, I'm just naming cities now, Dover, Ponderay, none of these are going to mean anything, right? So there were places that people gathered too, and those were important as well. But having a centralized place that could actually work as a place for there to be larger scale employment, companies with over 100 people, right? A hospital, all of these things were really key to having a real community and having the places where you could really have a quality of life where you actually could go and reasonably drive to a doctor.
Any final thoughts on this piece before we move on? I don't know how to really get this in here elegantly, so I'm just going to shoehorn it. I sent you a couple of options this week, and you told me that this Krugman article reminded you of another article I sent you about, of all things, floating cities that are being prototyped in the middle of the ocean. I would love to hear that connection because you really got me intrigued with that. And maybe feel free to just kind of close off with John's grab bag of thoughts on this article. Anything we didn't get to.
Random grab bag of thoughts, yeah. Starting with floating cities, right?
Let's do it.
So floating cities, which is this idea that like climate change is going to impact places. It's going to be hard to live, but never fear, we can just go to the water and live on floating cities.
Mel Gibson will save us all. It'll be great.
Right. Yeah. No, and it's just so crazy because it's such a way to abandon the problem that's in front of us by supersizing the solution. And it's not even a very good solution when you actually look at it. And this is the same thing that's happening with the solutions that Krugman properly points out didn't really work, right? Where the solutions to our problems in our rural places actually require localization and require an incrementalism and are actually unique and require not having one big broad solution that stretches across a whole bunch of different places, but solutions that actually speak to each individual town, right? There was a place where we had the strong towns retreat for staff, and I was invited to come and spend a little time with all of you, that had turned into this really great place for bicycles, right? They had this place for, like, to go ride mountain bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. And they had a place to ride bikes, and they had places, they had bike repair shops, and they had this had some cute restaurants that had popped up and really revitalized this small rural town. Well, everybody can't go and create the next like mountain biking location for everyone to come to or capital. That's not going to work. The lesson from that community is not let's all copy them. It's let's figure out what might work here where we live and what kind of industry can we build based on where we're at to actually build economic development around. And a lot of that's going to be homegrown and come from the local ideas and creativity of local people, rather than from some idea that's going to be hatched in a state capital or be hatched in DC, because the solutions have to be particular because that's the only way they're going to work. So just speaking to that for a second and expanding on that for a minute more, let me just tell the lighthouse story here really quick.
Oh yeah, we didn't get to the salad dressing. I knew we were missing something there. Please do.
Yeah, so lighthouse salad dressing is this amazing thing that comes out of Bonner County, North Idaho, which is the county inside of Sandpoint, where there was this restaurant where I'm going to call him Grandfather Hawkins. It's the Hawkins family that started salad dressing, and he is at his restaurant. He's a restaurant, and he has a dream one night. And in this dream, and this is the official company lore, God comes to him in this dream and gives him the idea for a blue cheese salad dressing.
Naturally.
Right. As occurs to all of us, I'm sure. And so.
That happens to me like once a week. So fine. That's
good. And so now with his whole salad dressing, it is a hit. And people love it. And people are coming into the restaurant just to buy jars of this salad dressing, right? His kids particularly start working on this thing, and they turn it into this now mega refrigerated salad dressing company. Check it out. It's in the refrigerated aisle in produce. Check out Lighthouse Salad Dressing, proud Sandpoint product, either number one or number two in its category, number three in a couple states still. But if listeners pay attention, they can help us solve that. I'm a big fan, right? Got to help right. The local economy in Sandpoint. So,
doing what you can.
Right. But this salad to build strong towns. But this salad dressing grew and grew and grew and now is this big national company that still is largely manufactured in a plant in Sandpoint, right? And all of the corporate headquarters are there. And it grew incrementally over time where it slowly just progressed and built piece by piece in this organic way, where it started out as a piece of a restaurant and then got sold out to people who came in and then slowly started to build up production. And now is a big part of this local economy and a major employer. And there's all these residual employment that come out of that, of these people needing to have houses to live in and these people wanting places to eat and all the other things that come with that. And having that base employer help build out other things. But we could have never convinced in Sandpoint Lighthouse Salad Dressing to come and move into town. If it was already started someplace else, they weren't going to say, oh, let's go to this rural place. But the creativity and the ideas already existed in a family that had literally lived for generations in that town. And that came up with a great product in that place and then figured out how to export it to other places. And so that's just what I want to say, is that the solutions for economic development in the places we live, yeah, Paul Krugman's right. He cannot solve that problem. But there are ways, if we can find out ways to make investments that put decision-making in local people's hands and help feed into that creativity that exists in our rural communities and stop trying to characterize them as basically know-nothings in the same way, frankly, that the inner city was paradised and suggested these places were empty and no activity was happening. They ended up just wiping them out with urban renewal when the reality was there was all this life and value in those communities. Everything from right from the artists in where Jane Jacobs lived to the vibrant culture that's formed the global phenomenon of hip hop in other parts of New York, right? These are incredibly cultural relevant places. And while there are less people living in them, there exists tremendous capacity in our rural places too. So that's my little like rant about a whole bunch of things of grab bag rant, I guess, and some attempt at a conclusion.
No, totally. Thank you for indulging me in variety hour. But we do have one more thing to do before we sign off today, which is we have to go to the down zone. I love saying that to newcomers because they never know what it means. All it means is that I want to hear from you, John, what you have been reading or watching or listening to, just enjoying. It doesn't have to touch the Strong Towns conversation. I just think it's fun. Tell me what's been on your media hit list lately.
So I thought about this and I was like, you know, Chuck is always like reading, like bringing deep spiritual texts or like nonfiction that he's read. And yeah. It's always like, right. And I'm like, oh, you know, I've never been on the podcast, so I can lie about the thing I read a month ago or whatever. But I have to be honest. What am I obsessed about right now? Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I'm with you.
So I did not watch a single episode of Game of Thrones till 3 months ago and then binged through the entire series. So I'd be ready to watch it in real time and not have it spoiled for me. And now I'm one episode behind. And I'm like, oh, I got to get caught up because I got to stick with it here. But wow, is that show just like layers and layers of that show. And I can't help but make connections between things. And I'll just say what I love about fantasy is how it gets us to start thinking about the world in different ways, right? And apply it back to our own experience and helps us think more expansively. And this is so key to what we talked about earlier today, right? It's just coming from a place of imagination and expansive thinking. And if you look at Game of Thrones, one of the really cool things I think that I've discovered as I watched it this last and started like getting into Game of Thrones media are all these conversations like applying Game of Thrones to like theories of real politic. And sort of the conversations that have happened around Game of Thrones by political scientists around like global interactions and global affairs and foreign policy and just how there are these connections of the way that characters behave in Game of Thrones and how they think about their interests and how we think about global theories and things there too and just the level of deep thinking that's taking place. So I think those kind of odd parallels can sometimes help us break out. And I've loved like following that trend of thoughts and then just like, one quick note, one of the explicit things that the author has said, right, about Game of Thrones is that the dragons are a metaphor for nuclear weapons. So just think about that when you're watching and what that means, what the implications are. And that's my down zone.
I love it. We should write a Strong Towns article about like the approach to infrastructure in Westeros versus the Dothraki kingdom.
Well, most of the work, like, the only thing that didn't last is this ice wall. And spoiler, but that ice wall now has come down and they're never going to be able to rebuild it. They don't know how. So this big maybe infrastructure project ultimately seems to have been a failure. Meanwhile, these dirt roads everywhere, they seem to be holding up pretty well.
Army's doing good.
So, you know, I think that generally the infrastructure in Game of Thrones seems pretty sustainable. But I do worry about that ice wall, which seemed to be I'm just building these large walls, not necessarily a great idea.
That's true. Love it. Well, I've also been enjoying Game of Thrones, but my submission to the Down Zone this week would actually be about one of your Idaho brethren, John. I'm reading Educated by Tara Westover, and I'm really enjoying it. It's a nonfiction book. It's a memoir. Nonfiction book. I sound like such a tool. about a young woman who grew up in a family of survivalists in the southeast corner of Idaho, which I think is like the opposite of where you spent most of your time in Idaho. She very, very gradually over the course of her childhood realized that she didn't want to, for instance, be homeschooled. She did want to participate in traditional medicine as opposed to getting all of her medicine via tinctures that her mother made. And she changed her life and she left her context. But she tries to return to it. And I think it's just a really interesting lens through which to view like how the places that we live in shape us, whether that's a family with extreme beliefs or a physical landscape. The landscape of Idaho is really important to this book. And I think it's so great. And I'm only about a third of the way through, but I'll have to circle back in another week and see if someone else has picked it up and how they enjoyed it.
I have been meaning to read that, and this may be just the nudge that I need. Although I might have to start expanding my reading to topics that you haven't already recommended to me so that I can seem, I can seem smarter in the future when I'm on. But thank you so much for having this discussion with me. This
has
been a blast.
Yeah, a total treat. And we will do it again. I really would like to make you kind of like an alternative Chuck. You know, like basically I would like to have you on the show as often as possible as Chuck gears up into his book tour and as his event season heats up. I think it would be awesome to have your point of view on here more. So, you know, listeners, look out for more John in the future. Well, thank you again, John, for coming on. And thank you everyone for listening to Upzoned. If you want to support the show, you can do that by giving us a 5-star review on iTunes or the ratings platform of your choice. You can always join the Strongtowns movement at strongtowns.org/membership. You can pre-order Chuck's book, Strongtowns, a bottom-up revolution to rebuild American prosperity. I always have to coach myself through that full subtitle. Thank you again for listening and telling your friends about the Strongtowns movement. Keep doing what you can to make your town a little stronger.